Fifth episode, What Happens in a Coma. Within the walls of the temple, it was always calm and quiet. Here, the seeker always found answers to any question, and the suffering finally found peace and acceptance. Today, the Keeper of Knowledge once again gathered his disciples here. Inquisitive minds, set on the path of spiritual development, wouldn't let go of the Master. Only he could reveal to them so many unusual mysteries, so much knowledge about life in all its forms. Today's conversation continued the recently started topic. There were many questions accumulated, and the disciples were eager to ask their master.
Dear Master, I wanted to ask about the coma state.
Vlada, a charming and modest girl with green eyes, raised her hand and looked at the keeper.
When a person is in a coma, does any beneficial experience occur at that moment? And also, is it worth sustaining life with a machine if a person does not emerge from a coma for a long time?
The sage paused for a moment, then answered the girl.
Certainly. Much depends on the depth of the coma. Sometimes a person is kept connected to a life support system for years, even though in fact they are already a living corpse. And a significant portion of the brain, based on medical indicators, will not recover. The patient's relatives and loved ones often refuse disconnecting, hoping in vain for years, and cannot let go of the person. In such cases, of course, it is in vain. But if the coma is short-term, then of course there is a purpose to using life support machines. The state of coma is beneficial. Consciousness enters a subtle level and extracts valuable experience from there. Upon awakening, much becomes clear. What you are doing wrong in life and what you should strive for.
And what if these sensations are misinterpreted? Can that happen?
Vlada inquired.
Yes, I have a good example on that matter. One of my close disciples, before acquiring knowledge, was in a coma and entered the subtle level. Upon awakening, she did not realize what had happened to her, but felt the need for learning, constantly wanting to gain knowledge. Since she knew nothing about spiritual enlightenment, she thought she needed to enroll in college, and she decided to satisfy this eagerness by pursuing professional education. She started studying and realized that the desire for knowledge was not satisfied. Everything was not right. Lectures were boring. There was discomfort inside, wasting time in vain. But then, fate arranged everything in such a way that she learned about our school and attended a seminar. Later, she, of course, dropped out of her college and started properly studying higher knowledge. She came to realize that she had taken the path indicated to her in the subtle level.
I love stories with a happy ending.
The disciple smiled.
I read in your samadhi, The Origin of Life, that when a person is in a coma, their etheric and physical bodies remain here, flowing through channels. Starting from the vital body and above, the bodies fly away. So, a person seems to transform into a plant in the form of these two bodies, physical and etheric, and there is nothing else in them. The other bodies are flying somewhere. Tell us more about this, Master.
Yes, Vlada.
The guru smiled.
The soul of such individuals is at a subtle level. Sometimes a person remembers what they saw and understood there. Then revelations come to them, that our life is not the only one in the cycle, that there are so many forms of life in the subtle level. The person gains insight, but not everyone reaches the subtle level in such states. In this case, it looks as if the soul, leaving the physical body, can simply watch itself from the side, observe the manipulations with the body performed by doctors, who comes to visit, etc. But here too, important knowledge comes, that in fact, the I is not the physical body, but something greater.
Upon these words, Amina joined the conversation. A tall, dark-browed beauty with thick black hair. She clarified,
"Master, it means that the etheric body somehow supports life and physiological processes in the physical body. But the motor device is contained in the vital body, right? So, the energy in the etheric body is spent, but no movement occurs. Only the instinctive center works. Can the energy of the etheric body be depleted? If not, why do we need machines and tubes? If not, then the etheric body can manage the function of maintaining life on its own. Master, help us understand all this."
Here, Amina gestured with her hands and exhaled. It was evident that she was indeed a bit confused. The master looked kindly at Amina, sitting next to him, and gently explained,
"The thing is that some functions of internal organs may be disrupted. The etheric body can certainly maintain viability, but restoring the function of damaged internal organs without appropriate medical intervention is extremely difficult, and doctors will not allow attempting to restore them without their involvement, as the risks are too great for both doctors and patient. For example, if the heart stops, there is no pulse, no breathing. In this case, the soul leaves the body because it can no longer stay in it. It also needs proper conditions. At this moment, the patient is resuscitated, CPR is performed, a defibrillator is applied, or something else. After some time, the heart starts beating again, and the soul can return and live on, but already with tubes connected to the heart muscle to keep it working."
"Ah, that's what it is,"
Amina said thoughtfully.
"I didn't think about that. Thank you, Master. Now it's clear."
Next, Elena raised her hand, a blue-eyed brunette with a short, neatly styled haircut. Her hands were slender, and her skin had a cold shade. She looked graceful and aristocratic.
"Tell us, great master,"
she began.
"Can fainting be considered a state of coma? Before I came to the school, I often fainted. And during those times, I had visions. In them, I saw subtle bodies and the master. But no one believed me. I would like to know what fainting really is."
"Yes, the same with fainting. The soul at that moment also separates and drifts off to the subtle level, and various visions may occur. There are several options here. Either we can only see our body lying down, or we can meet angels or masters there, or deceased relatives may appear to us, and so on. All of this gives us knowledge of the existence of the subtle level. There is a whole life there, more vibrant, vivid, with more obvious meanings. Knowledge can be transferred from there, and we can remember it when we return from the fainted state."
"All right, thank you, Master."
Elena thanked and asked the next question.
"Am I correct in understanding that such an experience helps the soul to become wiser, and a person who has come out of a coma or fainting will already spiritually evolve, or at least come closer to the path of spiritual development?"
"Of course. If a person, upon returning, remembers a lot, then he cannot live as before. The realization of the subtle level and everything the person learned there is a colossal shock for him. But, as we mentioned earlier, the vision may be short, unclear, and the person may not immediately understand what he saw. He may think it was a dream and meant nothing. Not always clear memories are retained. But if he really stayed there for a long time, then he would not be able to live as before."
Elena, tilting her head slightly, looked at the keeper, thanking him for the answer, and he silently accepted her gratitude. Arthur decided to ask the next question. He was a short, red-haired guy with thin mustaches and tousled hair.
"Master, we can also see the subtle level. For this, we don't need a coma. It's enough to use holotropic breathing. When you push yourself to a certain limit in trance, there is a momentary escape of consciousness beyond the body. Is this a useful experience? Should we focus on it and practice flying out for a longer time? Or is it not crucial at this stage?
These are good practices, but it's best when we use elevated emotions. In this case, the soul immediately goes to the higher world with that emotion. The soul is in the divine world, and there a new vision may arise. It seems like a person is in the physical body, but at the same time, he communicates with angels. These elevated experiences allow us to perceive everything differently, and this is the closest to such an escape. Because through trance, this escape may happen. But there is a high probability that the soul will not go far and will just flee around the room. But an elevated emotion immediately transports to the divine level. And there, a person acquires the necessary knowledge.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me,
said Arthur and shared his experience.
I flew out once, not into the divine level, but into some technical layer of the subtle level. The difficulty was that everything seemed to have separated from me, except for a spark that was my consciousness, and I couldn't remember which of these worlds to return to. And it was so scary, simply unbearable. I still remember that state. I couldn't enjoy the moment. I remembered everything, but I wouldn't want to go back there, because I didn't remember where my current world was. They are all very similar and slightly different. So, it turns out that leaving the body does not guarantee elevated emotions. So I wonder, are all such experiences useful, even if unsuccessful? Maybe I should have learned something from there.
The master took a cup of fragrant tea in his hands, brought by his assistant at his request. He took a sip of the hot drink and waited for a moment, savoring the taste of the brewed leaves. Opening his eyes, the Keeper of Knowledge answered Arthur.
This means that you still have a fear of death. It's normal. In these moments, a person starts to fear that he would disappear and would not be able to regain his previous form. It can be compared to a dream. Our consciousness travels, experiences some stories, sometimes the most incredible ones. But at the same time, our physical body always remains in normal reality, in the same place, in the same conditions. So there's nothing to be afraid of. In any world we enter, angels or other souls there will meet and accompany us to the necessary world. The fear of death is the fear of the unknown. The vital body activates, and a person gets scared, wanting to return to the known and familiar world to which he is accustomed. Even if a person is disabled or his life is very difficult, full of suffering, he still fears the subtle level and wants to return to the previous world, instead of being in a better world with the angels.
At that moment, the sage addressed all the participants in the conversation, surveying the disciples in the circle.
Perhaps someone else would like to share their experience in such immersions. We will be happy to listen and discuss.
Two people raised their hands. The first to speak was Polly, a light-haired girl in her mid-30s with dimples on her cheeks and full lips.
Yes, Master, I would like to share my experience,
she replied with eyes burning with memories.
I had an escape when I was under anesthesia for the first time. I confused reality and the subtle level at that moment. I was not ready and did not know how it would happen, so it was difficult and frightening for me. Coming out of anesthesia was a mix of reality, tears, emotions. I was delirious, and the emotions were confused. Only later did I understand what had happened to me. And later, when I was about to be under anesthesia for the second time, I prepared myself. The mindset was different. I thought, oh, great, now I'll travel. So I later understood how unusual and interesting that state is when you're somewhere traveling. Essentially, people who are under anesthesia also have escapes, but not far, probably in the area of the operating room. Isn't that right, Keeper?
Yes, Polly. A person can escape under anesthesia, but not too high. At that moment, he may be in the etheric world and the vital. If you don't go too high, such an experience doesn't happen. So when we, with elevated emotions, enter the subtle level, we immediately go into the divine level. And if not in elevated emotions, then it's unknown where we will end up.
The second to raise his hand was Renat, a 28-year-old guy with a rare light beard.
Tell me, Keeper, is it possible that during intense spiritual practices, one may soar so deeply that one doesn't want to return back? You understand that one might not travel far, but consciousness may take a while to return after spiritual practice. Following the experience of elevated emotions, there's a prolonged absence in the present moment. How does one cope with this?
That's a valid question.
He warmly looked at the disciple.
You need to create a kind of anchor. For example, crossing your fingers in a certain way, or uttering a specific mantra. Something that serves as a small ritual for returning. If we have such an anchor, we can quickly return to the state we desire. Therefore, for all states in practices, you need to prepare such anchors for yourself. There are mantras and certain mudras for every occasion. You cross your fingers, recite the mantra, and return to where you need to be.
At this moment, the master took a brief pause, allowing the disciples to reflect on his words and their own practices. He took a singing bowl in front of him, starting a sound meditation. The disciples' gaze was fixed on the stick as it slid along the edge of the bowl under the keeper's guidance, complementing the quiet, meditative melody that filled the room. After the meditation, the disciples relaxed and smiled, preparing to continue the conversation. The sage set aside the bowl and prepared to listen to the next question. The discussion now shifted to a different topic. Michael, a young bald man with a scar on his cheek, raised his hand.
Keeper,
he began.
There is a truth that one should not become someone but dissolve oneself in this world. How can one understand this? And how can one learn to keep this in mind in a complex situation?
The sage rubbed his hands and melodically responded,
"Oh, we've reached the topic of egoism."
He smiled cunningly, looking at his attentive listeners, and began to answer the question.
A person is wired to wanting to become someone all the time. More precisely, it's their ego that wants that. The ego wants to be successful, cool, famous, and so on. The ego wants to be. If ego-driven desires arise, it's as if the person is contracting, separating themselves from God, from the surrounding world. And when a person separates themselves, they immediately feel bad. Therefore, one must strive to open up and dissolve in God, instead of letting the ego strive for titles. In challenging situations, it's our egoism that suffers the most. Strikes are delivered to egoism, and one should perceive it positively. One should see that these strikes destroy our ego, and that's good. Ego is destroyed, which means now I can open up to God, stop suffering, cease constant self-thinking, begin helping others, and become happy.
Michael continued to inquire, asking,
"Master, how are vices, passion, laziness connected to egoism?"
A person is always thinking about themselves. They contemplate their emotions, negativity, desires, focusing on what they want and moving toward those desires. And if something cannot be achieved, they start to get upset and think about that, too. They passionately desire something and don't get it. They delve into themselves, asking why they didn't get what they wanted. Or, for instance, they become lazy, anxious if forced to do something. So he becomes cunning and avoids work. There's a constant focus on oneself, self-concentration, self-identification. But everything should be done the other way around. When a person stops thinking about themselves and starts thinking about others, many vices disappear. It becomes easy and numerous opportunities arise to perform good deeds.
Here the master paused for a moment, then continued with verses.
We're all waiting for cheap recognition, unsure of what. When we grasp the secret of knowledge, we'll understand that everything is nothing. We'll understand. Vanity is nonsense. We won't find a trace of it. It seems the version is wrong. The rusty bolt isn't worth it. We'll understand. Vanity is nonsense.
The master fell silent, then asked Michael what specifically prompted his reflections on this.
Keeper, I asked you about it because there are disciples who've been on the spiritual path for many years, but suddenly find themselves in a stage of degradation where despondency, apathy, and laziness take over. It's very challenging for them to emerge from this state, and today I couldn't find the right words or methods to pull someone out of such a situation.
Michael sadly lowered his head. It was evident that this question troubled him.
We have instructions for such cases, and everything is clear in theory. But in practice, it proved to be very difficult. I told this person to stop focusing on themselves, shift attention to other people, at least in small everyday matters. Did I do the right thing? And what else do I need to do to pull someone out of such a pit? Is it possible, Master?
Of course.
The keeper instilled hope in the disciple's thoughts and encouraged him.
The person needs to understand one simple thing. I suffer because I think about myself. They must start doing something for others and forget about themselves for a while. Then they will feel good. Your task is only to try to help them realize this truth.
Thank you, Master. I understand.
Michael respectfully looked at the keeper. The problem that occupied his thoughts the whole day now seemed trivial and completely solvable for some reason. The master's support, felt now in his heart, warmed him. And it seemed that the friend who needed help also sensed it. At least, the disciple believed in it. Lily posed the final question for the day.
Master, I wanted to ask more about selfishness. Today, we listened to a chapter from a book where one of the characters was tortured. He was choked, a bag was put over his head, and he couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe while listening to it. I have a vivid imagination, and this whole scene and the feelings of the main character became very real to me. I was gripped by fear and excitement. It felt as if I were on the brink of life and death with this character. How can one not think about their own life in such situations, especially in threatening situations? How can one not think of oneself, forget about selfishness? How can this be used for personal development, and what specifically should be done?
One needs to be prepared for this, to be mindful in that moment. If a person is ready, knows that something will happen. For example, that they will be slapped or a bag will be put on their head, then they will understand that it's not a hopeless situation, but an opportunity. They will think, I am prepared. In this situation, I will practice. Otherwise, my suffering will be in vain. I need to practice, and this situation will help me progress significantly. And then, if a bag is placed over their head and suffocation begins, if they use that moment, they can gain much insight. A sage would say, See how easily you can be deprived of everything. Just restrict your access to air. And suddenly, you can't do anything. You continue to be selfish and think you're separate from this world. But it's an illusion. Without air, you can no longer exist. Just like without food and water. Therefore, a person should not be an egotistical. They should understand the need to merge with this world, open up, dissolve into it. That's what one should strive for.
Everyone fell silent, trying to ponder into the master's words. Grasping such concepts was not easy, and there was still much to contemplate. With this, today's conversation was coming to an end. The master folded his hands on his knees and, with a smile, addressed the disciples.
Today, we discussed quite unusual topics. I'm glad you had so many important questions. It's time to conclude our conversation.
The sage stood up and, smiling, spread his arms to the sides, letting everyone go, thanking his interlocutors for their thirst for knowledge.
May my blessing be with you.
Gratefully, the disciples gazed in admiration at the keeper. Many discoveries had occurred for each of them today, and there was still much knowledge to assimilate. In each one's thoughts, the magical resonance of the singing bowl lingered. Somehow, it sustained the flame ignited by the master in the hearts of his disciples. Each sound created by the keeper's hands resonated in the souls of his listeners, preserving in memory every word he spoke. Bestowing a blessing through a gracious gaze, the sage dismissed his followers, now eagerly anticipating a new encounter with the great keeper of knowledge.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.